Let's learn. We're up to. We are up to the Mabaya. He knows who I am? Okay.
Everybody knows who you are by now.
I don't think so. Okay, let's begin with Vagya. We learned yesterday the Rashi. The two Pesukim. And we learned two Pesukim in the Mitzudos and the Rashi. Let's now begin with Radak. Okay, the Radak, page 383. So the Radak begins with the Ibn Ezra. Baruch atah Adonai Elohim Melech Olam Shehakol Liyah Bidvaroi. Thank you. So Avadya here, the Radak says, we do not know who this person is. This is the same Avadya. Let me put the microphone down over here as you like, prefer. This is the same Avadya. Okay. This is the same Avadya that lived in the time in Melachim, in Achav Melech, the wicked king, and his Machashefa wife. Number two, second piece of information. He was a ger. Excuse me. He was a ger tzedek. Visnabe al ra al edoim, and he said prophecy, evil prophecy concerning his own nation. That's a chiddush, rabbis, because everyone knows the halacha that you're not allowed to remind a ger of where he comes from for 10 generations. Vayichad yisro. Al kol ha-toivo ha-she'os Hashem li-Yisrael. What does it say about Yichad? One of the many interpretations is that he was uptight. His flesh, he cringed. Because when he heard about the destruction of Egypt, Yisrael was part of Paro's cabinet. Yisrael was to some degree, was an honorary member of Egypt. We learned that when Paro was deliberating, when Paro was trying to decide what should he do with the Jewish people, should he destroy them, should he throw the males into the Yam, he had a discussion with his closest advisors. And amongst his closest advisors was Yisro. He was there. There were three people there. It was Yisro, Eoiv, and Bilam. Three people were there. Three people were part of the discussion. Bilam says, yes, do it. And Eoiv was quiet, silence. He had nothing more to say. And Yisro, he ran away. He says, I want nothing to do with this. And he ran away. And because he ran away, that's why he merited that he got an edim of Moshe Rabbeinu. And his descendants, with the Canaan, were great Talmidei Chachamim. But Yisro was still associated with the kingdom of Egypt to the degree where Paro consulted with him concerning the Shibud Mitzrayim. That says quite a bit. I mean, how many people are on the inner, you know, the inner members, the core of the advisory committee to the king? So when Yisro heard that Klal Yisrael was that Egypt was decimated, he had pain. He had tsar, because he was part of Egypt to some degree. Therefore, Chazal learned from this that when you have a ger tzedek, don't ever say something nasty about the goyim, pretty much, in the presence of a ger tzedek. A person, the ger from, let's say, any type of situation. But, let's say you have a ger, an Iranian. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning.
Let's say you have a ger from Iran, and he says, and we're obviously very, very, very concerned, very upset with what's going on in Iran relative to Eretz Yisrael, and you say the nastiest things about Iran in the presence of a ger tzedek, a Persian ger tzedek, that is forbidden, that is usur. You're causing him pain. What do you mean pain? He's Jewish, and the Persians are trying to kill the Jews. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He still comes from there. That is his home country. That's where his roots are. Even though he has converted to Yadus, it's still a human condition. It's part of the human condition that when you hear something evil, something nasty about where you come from, even though you know it's no good, they are correct, and you have removed yourself from that environment, it doesn't matter. You are causing that person tsar. Torah recognizes the human condition. Vayichad Yisro, Yisro cringed. There are many translations, but one of the translations is he cringed when he heard about all of the miracles that happened to Klal, the Hashem did for Klal Yisrael and destroyed Egypt, and that we learned, don't ever cause tsar. So here, look what's going on over here. Here you have Ovadia, who is the Ger Tzedek from Edom. So he is the one that is actually giving over information about the Korban of Edom. Isn't that very interesting? If you're not allowed to say something nasty to a person who is a Ger Tzedek from Edom, and yet he's the one that's saying the ultimate nastiness about Edom, predicting and prophesizing their destruction. It's not such a bad question. You know why? Because it's like self-deprecating humor. If a person gets up in front of an audience, goes on the world stage, okay, he gets his, what did they just say? They said the Academy Awards, right? You get up there and you go and you get in front of the whole world, you make some jokes about yourself. Deprecating humor. Wonderful, big deal. You can say the nastiest things about yourself.
Only a nigger can say nigger.
You can say, exactly, you can say, but if someone else would get up and say even a fraction of what you say about yourself, World War III will break out. That is also part of the human condition. I can say it. I can say about myself whatever I want, but you can't say it. So it's interesting that to say that Edom, if you go in Ovadia sitting in the audience, and a prophet gets up and says, Rabbi Isai, I want to give over a prophecy from Hashem concerning the nation of Edom. They're a nation that's bozui me'od. They're katon, they're nothing, they're bozui. And there's Nedomi sitting in the audience, a Ger Tzedek that is sitting in the audience. You have just committed the worst crime. You have done a terrible avera because you've said that the nation of Edom is bozui in the presence of a Ger Tzedek from the nation of Edom. But yet, if he gets up in front of the audience and says, Rabbi Isai, I want to tell you that Edom is a nation that's bozui ma'od, there's nothing wrong. And Adarabah, he has done something very proper. He has said the truth. So isn't that an amazing thing? How you can say about yourself whatever you want, but if someone says something, even a fraction of that to you, they are guilty of the worst possible crime. And it's amazing here that is exactly what Ovadia is doing. Ovadia is a ger adoimihaya. Vesnabe ra al edoim. And Echanan, he's one that has permission to say prophecy,
well,
evil prophecy.
Why he converted.
And Echanan, that's right, that's right. But let's say he was in the audience and someone would say to him, you see, we have here in the audience.
It could be offensive.
Very offensive. The Chazal say it's also, it's a halacha. It's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It's a halacha that you're not allowed to be. If someone says something nasty about a nation from where Ger Tzedek comes from, you're over on a terrible avera. And we learn that from the pasuk of Ayichad Yisro. But if you say it about yourself, it's all very important to keep in mind when we hear about. You see this often. People that have self-deprecating humor. And then...
Jews leave the world in that.
And self-deprecating humor, they do a lot worse than that. Self-hating Jews. Okay, it's even worse than self-hating humor. Okay, but itself, there's not a license. It's one of the dangers of going to entertainment. They're entertainment because a lot of entertainment today is self-deprecating humor. And that, in the person's mind, can lead to a mistake in saying, if he says nasty things about himself, so how much more so are we allowed to say nasty things about him and about other people as well? And that is false. That is categorically false. And it's hard in the person's mind to make that separation between those two principles. Okay, let's go further. So Now, what does that mean? The kappa, the hand. Now, I'm not even sure what this means. The kappa means the spoon. The spoon, which the craftsman, the nagra means the woodchopper. the wood chopper crafted, begavei, in that spoon itself, nishref chardala, the mustard will be burnt. The same spoon, I'm not sure, I have to go, I don't know what this means. It means something like, along the lines that the destruction comes from itself. The korban is ingrown. The seeds of korban come from within, implosion. It's not you don't need to destroy something from the outside. It can be destroyed from the inside. The tree itself provides the other expression. The tree, the wood of the tree, is used to chop down the tree itself. When a woodchopper wants to cut down the tree, he takes a piece of barzel, but he needs an axe. So where does he get? He needs a handle. He needs a handle, a kappa. Where does he get the handle from? Oh, he takes a branch. You take a branch off the tree, and you attach it to a piece of barzel, and you chop away on the bottom of the tree to destroy the tree. So the tree itself provided the material for the woodchopper to destroy the tree itself. Yeah.
It's the Sanhedrin in the Lamites base. It mentions exactly what you're saying. It mentions that.
It's one within. The korban is with...
about the axe.
Right, the axe. That's what I was quoting from. I know it's the Gemara somewhere. I thought that this was the Chazal, but it's not. Something different. Something very similar.
A few days ago, what it was
Lamites in Sanhedrin. The tree itself provides the wood for the axe that it itself can be cut down. And here's something very similar. Kabbalah Chat Nagra, Begavei Nishref Charedullah. What is chardlet within it? I'm not sure what this means. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, here the Radak is quoting the same Chazal as Rashi. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yav Yavadi Shadar Beit Shnei Rishoim Acha V'Izevel. He lived in the time of these two wicked people, the king and the queen. V'Leilama L'mima Asehem V'Yipora Me'esav Sharosha Shadar Beit Shnei Tzadikim Yitzchak V'Rivka V'Leilama L'mima Asehem V'Yinei Kol Divuoso Hoysa Al Edoim V'Amar Ki Im Churban Edom Tia Teshuas Yisrael. And he's saying as follows, with the Im Churban Edoim, with the Churban of Edoim will come Tia Teshuas, the salvation of the Jewish people, uvezek kila nivu aso, and that's all he has to say. Now he says obviously it's very important, and it's related very much to Purim. This idea, I saw this 2 days ago, it made an impression upon me, and also explained something very interesting about the Seder, the Haggadah Shel Pesach, and that is, on Purim, there are two components to Purim, Baruch Aror Haman, and Baruch Mordechai. And the truth is, each one of these things is really very, very different. Why do we have to focus on Baruch Mordechai? What is Purim? Purim is the downfall of our enemies. Is it really necessary that we be elevated? In the Purim story, we forget sometimes that there are really two separate miracles. When the Megillah begins, the Jewish people are looked down upon as scum of the earth. The Aseres B'nei Haman have issued a stop order on the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews are in Golos. The Jews are never going to be redeemed. They're looked down as nothing. It would be a miracle if at the end of the Megillah, the Jewish people would now have respect. There would be respect for the Jewish people. People come to recognize, you know, something happened in this world, and they come to have a moment of clarity that the Jewish people have contributed great things to this world. And they'll be elevated to a position of authority. Mordechai will be elevated to become the Mishnah L'melech, Mordechai Yatzim L'fnei HaMelech B'Levush Malchus. And it doesn't have to happen that Haman is killed. It doesn't have to happen that the Aseres B'nei Haman are killed. Maybe Haman will come around. Haman will come also to the parade and salute Mordechai. Mordechai, I was mistaken. Mordechai, you're really a great guy. Or at least Haman will stay home. He'll stay home and watch television and won't make trouble. And the Aseres to Haman. Is it really necessary that our enemies be destroyed? It's enough that they be silenced. They become neutral. They don't have to praise us. As long as they, you know, okay, you know what, I'm not gonna push this agenda anymore to cancel the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Wouldn't that be enough? Certainly that would be a miracle in and of itself. And that has happened. That has happened probably in history countless times. Not to the degree where it's Mordechai Yosef Lufnei HaMelech Bovash Malchus, but countless number of times in history the Jewish people achieve a degree of respect. Okay, something. And then there's another principle, is that where our enemies are destroyed. We have enemies who are planning and plotting. We are viewed to be the scum of the earth, Rachmana Litzlan, and we have enemies that are putting in motion a plan to actually destroy us, and then their plans are cancelled. Just because their plans are cancelled doesn't necessarily mean that the world has changed their opinion of us. They still don't have any respect for us. Okay, this is a very, okay, thank you very much. Okay, so it doesn't necessarily have to mean we are respected. As long as our enemies are defeated and the gzeirois rois are cancelled, that would be sufficient. Why is it necessary that both of these things coincide? Our enemies must be defeated, and at the same time we are elevated. In Yitzias Mitzrayim, we were elevated. We were elevated to an exalted level, and our enemies were destroyed. We were elevated. We were chosen to be the Am HaNifchar. The Egyptians, they came and they begged us to take the Bizas Mitzrayim. They came out to escort us, and then at the same time, they were defeated. They were destroyed. There was Makas Bukharos. There were two Veneisho Yoitzim Biyod Ramah. They went out in an exalted state, and at the same time, the Egyptians were destroyed. The two of these things coincide. Purim, it's Baruch Mordechai. Mordechai was elevated, the Jewish people were elevated, and at the same time, Arur Haman. That is something that why do these things have to go together? Yeah?
Because it goes all the way back.
Very good.
The
inverse, excellent. Game. That was part of the bracha of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu Yitzchak is kishezeh kom zeh noifel. It's not ever going to, the two exactly is, it comes from Yitzchak, and it's something that has to be understood. I don't have clarity in why it has to be like that, but this is something which comes out over and over again. You cannot have one without the other. There has to be both of these things. They go together, exactly. So here he just said that. That is the end of Purim. Purim, the whole thing of Purim is there is a Baruch Mordechai and there is an Arur Haman. They have to both. You cannot have a holiday, a Jewish holiday, that becomes unique unless you have both. If you'll have in history, in a moment in time, our enemies came to an end, that's not a holiday. Okay, it's not a holiday. You have a time when we're elevated to a great position of success, but the goyim still have no respect for us. That's not a holiday. You can use this, Rabbi Yisai, as an argument against. Okay, don't get upset at me over here. I have no agenda here. But Yom Atzmaot, is it? Okay, there are many issues with Yom Atzmaot, but there was one. There's one. Major flaw in Yom Ha'atzmaut if it can be a candidate to be a real holiday. We were elevated. We're elevated to a very, very high level. The whole world came to recognize for the first time in 2,000 years almost that the Jewish people have a right to have sovereignty. They have a right. They have a right to exist. There was respect. I mean, there was an elevation. Were our enemies defeated? Was there any Mashu of our enemies of an Arur Haman, when Klal Yisrael was there was a Baruch Mordechai, the Medinas Yisrael, the establishment of Medinas Yisrael to a degree you can argue, maybe you can't argue, but the best you can do is you can argue is a moment in time in history of Baruch Mordechai. The world comes together to acknowledge the Jewish people have a right to exist. It's Baruch Mordechai. Where is the Arur Haman? Where is the Arur Haman? Did anyone disappear? It only got them only got our enemies even more excited, even more worked up.
Well, no, if you look at it in the context of defeating the Nazis, then you could say that.
I hear what you're saying, but I know that the state of Israel is clearly a response to the Holocaust. Anyone that wants to deny that is living in dream world. Okay, that is a fact. Okay, the Medina as Yisrael is an outgrowth of the Holocaust, for sure. But the Holocaust was, you can still separate the two. The establishment of the State of Israel did nothing to defeat our enemies. Enemies were defeated for other reasons, not because of us. In fact, they succeeded, Rachman Lutzan, wiping out 6 million people. You can't say there was an Aura Haman. The story of Purim, now no one died. I mean, it shouldn't say that Daniel died. There was collateral damage. Okay, there was major.
It's not really comparable. Who we were as a people.
We suffered. There's 6 million people. You can't really say there was an Aura Haman with the establishment of the State of Israel, because the bottom line is 6 million people were killed. You can't go, and besides the 6 million people killed, the collateral damage of what that meant for Klal Yisrael is just unimaginable. Oh, you can say they were defeated. They were defeated. Big deal.
Despite the efforts of our enemies, nevertheless,
but in the big picture, a third of Klal Yisrael was wiped off the map. So you can't say that we were defeated, that our enemy was defeated. We were defeated. I'm sorry.
You could say the same thing about Yetzias Mitzrayim then.
Only the Chamushim. Okay, you're saying very good. You're saying the Chamushim Olu. You're saying very good. I hear what you're saying, but Chazal don't look at it like that. You're right. It's only a fifth survived. You're correct. But for Chazal, for some reason, which I don't know. I have no understanding. They don't dwell upon that. You never see Chazal dwell upon that Klal Yisrael, when they came out of Mitzrayim, were defeated because 4/5 Jewish people didn't survive. So it's a question that is such a major question. It's the elephant in the room.
They weren't defeated by the enemy.
They
were defeated by God.
So what?
He's having a good answer. He's saying that they were not. They died. How did they die? Don't kill them. Hashem took their lives during the Tzarich Mechoshach. They died. So the Egyptians didn't come and kill them. The Holocaust, we were killed by the Germans. It's a different story. I like your answer. Okay, but let's not dwell too much upon this. The point over here is that you see here over and over, and the Radakshas said this very clearly, is that there are two parts to a Jewish holiday, to ultimate success. And they depend on one upon the other. And as Yisrael Abuchol, you pointed out, the Makar comes from Yitzchak, where Yitzchak says, Kishazeh kam, zeh noifel. Is that the Hoyoka asher paraktu ulo mialtzav arecha. Okay, in the time when Klal Yisrael is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, then Esav has the power to defeat Klal Yisrael. It's kishazeh kom, zeh noifel. There has to be this imbalance where we are on the top and they are crushed.
Are you familiar with the zero-sum game?
No.
You know what that is?
No.
There are. Let's say, take a sports example. In baseball, if you score a run, it doesn't mean the other team loses a run. But there are other types of games where if I score a point, you lose a point. That's the total number of points is zero. That's called a zero-sum game. So when I advance, you drop, and so on. And that's called a zero-sum game.
Okay. So, but I just want to make out this point, and it's obviously very controversial, is that the Medinas Yisrael was an incredible event. Nisim v'Niflois, all in the category of Baruch Mordechai. I don't believe you can say in that event, you can say there is an Aror Haman. Adrabah, the Haman is what allowed there to be, but you don't have that same degree of Aror Haman, therefore you're missing one major half, 50% of what Chazal consistently demand for something to be viewed as success. Success is the Baruch Mordechai together with the Aror Haman. Here, we look at those words of the Radak. The Radak, one more time, those last couple of words. It's the last line, the first paragraph of the Radak, page 383. Ki, together with the Chorban of Edom, Tigiyet Teshuas Yisrael. With the Churban of Edom comes the salvation of Klal Yisrael. It's Toluy Ze Bozer. It's not that just the nation is just going to just disappear and we're going to still cruise along in autopilot in Golos. No, no. When Edom falls, that's when we rise. It's a seesaw. It's Kishazeh Kom Zenoifel, the two components go together. Let's go further in the Radak. Now, when is this Nevuah referring to? Now, he's going off on a tangent here. He's telling us something, a new dimension to this prophecy. This Nevuah took place during the time of, was the reference to what is going to be in time of the Bayesheni, Kishaheireu B'nei Edom L'Yisrael B'churban Bayesheni. This refers to Titois. When did Edom have prominence in this world? Rome. Edom is what we associate with Rome. They were the ones who destroyed the base Hamigdash, Titois, and the Kesar. Who was the Kesar at that point? I remember, I forgot all my history. But Titois was the general who came and destroyed the base Hamigdash. It was his battle. It was his defeat. The Arch of Hadrian. Okay, whatever it is. It's he gets credit. He was not the Caesar. Titois was not the Caesar.
He was the general.
He was a general. And the entire success, the entire defeat of the Jewish people was purely attributed to him. That's why it's the Arch of Titus. It's not the Arch of whoever the Caesar was at that point in time in history.
I don't remember.
There were different people. There was a whole.
He got the message and he left.
He left because you're gonna become the new Caesar. Who's the one? What was him? Aspasianus.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Aspasianus. Whatever it is. But it was a very dangerous job to be a Caesar. Okay, in Rome, very dangerous job. You didn't last very like the Kohen Gadol. Every year, whoever went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they were 300 Kohanim Gedolim. They tied a rope around their leg. I once asked a Kohen, did you ever have a dream to be a Kohen Gadol? You're a Kohen. Okay? Did you ever dream that maybe one day you'll be the Kohen Gadol? So he says to me, without batting an eyelash, he says, I don't like when people tie ropes around my leg. Chains around my leg. So he says to me, I'm not into that. I'm not comfortable with a chain around my leg. What does he mean? Because every year there were 300 of these fellows who went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim and did not come out alive. They just died in their mysterious sudden death. And they had, how were they going to get him out? So they had a chain. Because this happened so often, they had a chain around the leg and they pulled him out on the chain. They pulled him out. So how could this, after it happened like 5 times, what was the 6th guy thinking? What was the 7th one thinking? What was the 8th? How did you get down to 300? How could it possibly be? Well, you can have a better fate than the guy before you? The answer is kovoid. Ah, delicious.
I remember.
It's worth it. You know, it's no different today. Today, there's a line of people that will line up. I'm not joking with you. This is true. You can Google this. Ask the Google Hadar. This is true. There's a line of people that would line up from this door around the whole Flatbush, be willing to go on a one-way trip to Mars. Okay, if they want to go to Mars, today they have the technology to go to Mars. No question about it. But they don't have the technology to come back. Okay, they have easy technology. It's all ready to go. Out of the box. You could buy an Amazon. All ready to go. They have all the technology. They can send a human being to Mars.
One way trip.
But you're not coming back. The technology to bring him back from Mars does not exist. And yet, there are hundreds, thousands of people that say it's okay. I want to be that man that will
even
go on.
If you get to Mars, the chance of living there is very low.
Right, exactly. How long you live on Mars? How much action are you going to have until you're going to survive? You'll survive a couple of days, a couple of weeks, a month. Let's say you'll survive 3 months. The most. If you even make it there, it doesn't blow up somewhere along the line. Okay? There are thousands of people that are willing for the covet of being the first man to go down. They'll name a high school after them somewhere, public school somewhere, I don't even yeshiva after that, maybe, right? He was Moisu Nefesh to be the first man. For the kavod, I'll do it. I'll be willing to be the first man to go to Mars, even though it's a one-way trip. So going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim was even a bigger, it's hard for us to understand, was even a bigger kavod than going to Mars. And that's why, even though number 50 died, you're up to 300. I'm still willing to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and die because of the kavod. Everyone knows, I am the Kohen Gadol. I'm going to go to Yom Kippurim into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Very, very, the Koyach of Kavod is awesome.
Isn't a suicide bomber the same idea? They think that the world to come is...
I don't know. You have to go into the mind of a suicide bomber. That's a lot been said and studied about that. What is their mindset? What do they do to them? A lot of them, it seems that we know, they drug them up. It seems they don't really believe in what they do. They drug them up. They force them. They're abused. They're psychologically abused people who are brainwashed to do this, even though they don't even know what they're doing. They're children. Rahman al-Islam, what do you do to these people? All right. So therefore, the whole thing is based upon, the whole one gets credit is Titus. Because the Caesar, like I told you, it was a very dangerous job to be a Caesar. Who would want to be a Caesar? You, most of them wouldn't live very long because they would be poisoned. They would be assassinated. The preferred method of assassination in time of the Caesars was?
Poison.
You go to dinner, it may be your last dinner, your last supper. Because they put poison. It was very, very common. That's why they all had tasters. They had tasters, and anything that before you ate anything, someone would taste what you ate. See if this guy survives. If he survives,
it's only for short term poison. If it's
right,
poison,
exactly. So they both die. The taster will die, and the king will die. And Hanami, exactly. So you can't. It's not a perfect world, right?
Yeah.
You gotta do the best that you can. Do they have that today still? Does
yes.
Trump has a taster?
Certain
countries, so Saddam Hussein, I think, had all these crazy things. He probably for sure had one of those, had its own taster. I even wonder if the President of the United States, they must have some really... Look, I know I saw once an incredible documentary about Air Force One, and I was amazed. One of the things that they do is before they fill up the plane with gasoline, with fuel, diesel fuel, jet fuel. They test the jet fuel. It shouldn't be water. They actually, wherever they travel in the world, they have a portable laboratory with them. A portable laboratory, because it's the easiest thing. You come to a country and you have to refuel. You have to stop there. Even Air Force One needs to refuel. They don't have their own jets flying in with fuel to refuel Air Force One. And they landed in the airport and have to refuel. So the fuel they give, the Air Force One, is the same fuel they're giving JetBlue. So who says someone didn't come along and fill up the truck that's coming to fill up the plane, that they filled to the tank of fuel is water. Or something which, when it's in the air, all of a sudden it will crash. They have a laboratory, a portable laboratory. Before they put fuel into Air Force One, it is tested to make sure that it is the real deal. It's a taster, right? It's no different than the person takes it. Isn't it amazing? That's an incredible thing. They don't do that for anything else. You never go fill your car with gasoline. You have to, I have a laboratory. I have to make sure there's the real gasoline. You know, if it's not a real gasoline, then who knows? My car will stop. You'll have me in jail. I'll get a ticket.
Yeah.
So there is something to this even bizman hazeh. Bayamim ohem of bizman hazeh. So anavu hazeh soysa b'vayshen sheiru b'nei edun lishol v'chumayz sheni. Okay, so now the second line in the second paragraph, page 83. The parashas al shloisha pishay edoim, going back to the beginning of Amos. The anavi hazeh snabish asakulish brachuli pora mechem bachris hayyamim. Hashem will punish the nation of Edom in the times of Moshiach for destroying the bayis. Sheni, we find consistently throughout Tanakh that Hashem has a very special hatred in his heart for anyone that destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. Very deep-rooted sinner for Bavel and for Edom, specifically because they destroyed Hashem's bias. Okay, that's a special darga, a special place in Hashem's heart. Ba'alois Yisrael Minagolus, when will they be destroyed? When the Jewish people, they return. they are restored from Golus. The Eretz Edom Eina Hayom Livnei Edom, and Eretz Edom Eina Hayom Livnei Edom Ki Umos Nisbal Bilu. Now he's getting into what we mentioned before in the previous Sefer, in Omos. In the very end of Omos, we discussed this topic that Bos Sancheriv Ubilbil Kolumos. Now, Bavel was, Edom is much, much after Sancheriv. Okay, we're dealing over here almost 1,000 years later, but it happened again in the chaotic existence of this world. Edom, in the last 2,000 years, there's been a lot of chaos and a lot of wars. And during those wars, the nations have become all mixed up. We live today in the global village. Everyone is nishtahi, nishtaher. Everyone is running as a refugee from one country to another country. No one really...
Not in Europe so much.
And also, he's saying Edom. He's saying that this is something which happened naturally, he's saying, over the last 2,000 years. I mean, he's talking over here 1,000 years ago. You have to... Everything is relative. He's talking about the last 1,000 years. We can certainly say this when we're looking back over 2,000 years. But he's saying that all of the nations over a long period of time have become mixed up, and we no longer have purity anymore. The Eretz Edom in Hayim Levnei Edom Ki Umos Nisbabel Rubam Heim Bnei Emunas Hanoitzrim.
You know, yeah. Original territory of Edom, right?
We don't even know where that is.
Well, let's say it's somewhere to the south or the east of Eretz Israel.
And what would you say that is today? Tell me what that is today. Saudi Arabia?
Jordan, Saudi Arabia, I don't know.
So isn't that shocking? Today no one would ever imagine that Saudi Arabia has anything to do with Edom.
So my point is that while the territory now may no longer contain the inhabitants, you know, they may be a mixed bag of whatever, but the people of Edom are now scattered among the Christians and the Muslims.
Right. Look, Western today, it is a given.
Talking about all countries necessarily. Right. He's talking about the people who the original Edomites.
The Radak was written before they discovered America. Okay, the Radak is from Rishon. There was no America. There was no such thing as this thing called Western civilization. My cousin, he's the professor. What's his title? Of Western thought.
Right.
Something Western civilization. There was no such thing as the West. It didn't exist. There was no America. There was no America. Who lived in America? Only Sfaradim lived in America then. No.
The Spanish?
Before Columbus came, who lived in America?
1946.
Your people.
1946.
Okay, I opened up a can of worms. Okay,
Spain.
Quiet. No more. I started opening the can of worms. I know.
You know why? Because the president.
Okay, that was a joke. That was just a joke. There was not a serious
statement.
No, you
should be in there, Spain. Everybody
was not a statement.
Are you allowed
to
talk about it?
What? Let's go further. Kamo ship rashim and nevuas parash al shoshim shoshim and hanavi al zachal snabi al shoshim kashmok li parmi chem yachta yom ba'alai si shom nagos. Eretz Edom. Okay, third line of this paragraph. Eina hayom levnei Edom. Ki umos nisbal bulu. They will become mixed up. Rubam einim einim b'nei emunas hanoitzrim. V'emunas hayish me'elim. Now he's saying something also which doesn't make really sense in our minds is that b'nei Edom he is associating with two nations. The Christians and the Muslims. Wow, that's not the way. The Ishmaelim of the Muslims. He's saying there are two besides Klal Yisrael, besides Ziyadus, there in the world, it's except there's two major religions, Islam and Christianity. The Radak is saying that any member of Islam or Christianity is who we call Edom. Yes, certainly. Certainly. The First Crusade. What was the First Crusade? What was the Crusades about? It was a war between the Christians and the Muslims. A world war.
Right.
And that was in 1096. And the Radak was much later.
Oh, the Muslims were
668. And the Christians was zero. That's where it all started, right? It all started with zero, the Christians. So the Muslims came 600 at least 668 years after the Christians. And when was the Radak? I don't know, the 1200s, the 1300s, the 1400s? I don't know, the Radak was much later. So the Radak over here is saying that when you want to understand, because this is a question which bothers many people. Today in the modern world, when we talk about Islam, oh, that is Yishmael ben Avraham Avinu. And when we talk about Christianity, this is Esav ben Yitzchak. What? Who says? Who says if you were to do a DNA test and trace the lineage of the Pope and of, I don't know, who is the chief, the Mufti,
the leader of
the leader.
Yeah.
Who is the Mufti today? Is there a Mufti today?
Yeah.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah, we have.
There's no Mufti today.
The leader of ISIS is Mufti. The leader of ISIS.
Okay, but what about the mainstream?
Mufti.
The Shiites and the Sunnis, they have a leader? Do they have a Rosh Hashiva? Is there a Rosh Hashiva from the Shiites? There's no Achdus. There are cousins. They have no Achdus. They have no Achdus.
The Sunni and Shia has cat and mouse, or dog and cat.
They don't have one supreme leader.
No.
The Christians have a pope.
But that's only the Catholics.
The Catholics. The Protestants?
No.
Protestants, a democracy. There's no one person. They don't want to accept one leader. But the Catholics, they have a pope. Okay, it used to be that the Muslims did have a leader, the Mufti. Not anymore. Now, I don't know, I'm not Bucky and all these and yonah, but it seems that they, whatever. But the point is, if you were to trace the lineage of the average Muslim, you would not have any. You would discover they're not related to Yishmael ben Avraham. And if you trace the lineage of many Christians, you may discover that they're not related whatsoever to Esav ben Yitzchak. So why then today do we exactly Christianity? Well, Christianity they brought the goyim into the picture. Exactly, it really came from Jews. It was a fringe element of Jews, of renegade Jews who made their own religion. So why then do we today in the modern world, we're brainwashed. We're brainwashed that when you talk about a member, a person who's a worshiper of Islam, he's a representative of Yishmael ben Avraham Avinu. And when you look at a person who's a diehard Christian, he is a representative of Esav ben Yitzchak. Why is that so? Why is that so? It's not in their blood. How did this happen?
Well, first of all, the Muslims, certainly the Arabians and others, they may very well trace their lineage back.
But not necessarily.
Not every single one.
And the Christians as well. They're not necessarily. So why in our minds is it etched into our brains this understanding?
Well, that's a
chazal. Is it? It's not a chazal.
That aluf matiel. Matiel is Rome. And so on. There are many references to.
So was Rome, maybe they were descended, but Rome was 2,000 years ago. And when Rome existed, Rome was not Christian religion. Rome first became a Christian religion much, much later.
That's right.
400 years later. So when Rome destroyed, so therefore, why do we associate Christianity with Edom? We look today as Christianity, this is the essence of Rome. No, it's not. Rome, when it began, they were pagans. They have nothing to do with Christianity. Nothing. Later, they became a tzaddik. They became Christians.
Chinese.
So today, when you say Christianity, oh, this is Esav. When you think of Esav as the Pope.
Well, then as the religion declined, but nevertheless, the Western civilization
carried on from Rome.
Right.
So obviously, there's a lot of here going on. And what the Radak is saying is, Radak is not going with the common understanding. In the modern world, today, 2,000 years later, this is the way it is, and this is what is accepted. You don't have to be a blood relative to Yishmael.
Right.
We assume, I don't know why, how, but the assumption is that the Yishmaelim, those today who practice, who are members, card-carrying members of Islam, they represent their neshamos, who they are, truly represent Yishmael. Why? I don't know exactly why, but the smart... What? No, not Japanese. No, they're part of a different line in this world. They're not part of Shem. The world comes from three people. After the Mabul, there is Shem, Chom, and Yefes. Three religions all come from Shem. Okay? Monotheism is from Shem. The other nations of the world who are robots, okay, artificial intelligent people, they are from Chom and Yefes. Chom and Yefes, what they are, I asked someone who spends a good part of the year in China. He came to Shul and he was talking about Shalosh Shudas and we were grilling him. Define their relationship with Hashem, the Chinese. He works with them, he goes there the whole day, he works with them and he's telling us all these fascinating things. And he says, what? He says, you don't understand. This is what he said. I don't know if it's true or not. This is his opinion. He works with them. He says, they're wired. Their brains are wired so differently. They just don't get it. They just don't get it. They don't have a receptor. You know, you could have the most expensive television. If you don't have an antenna, you don't have a reception, it's a piece of glass. It's a piece of garbage. You need the kalim, you need the transmitter to take in the technology to bring it inside. That it becomes alive. It turns into the Egel Hazof. Yet you need something for it to come inside. They just don't got it. They're missing this perception, this receiving technology to connect with the Creator. Not everyone, of course, okay, not everyone. But many of them, it's a culture where they just, it's not like they're rebelling against Hashem. They're not rebelling. There's no anti-Semitism. He claims there's no anti-Semitism there. And in fact, they find Jews very interesting, very intriguing. And they like them. They find them like such interesting people. And when they have no anti-Semitism because they don't even know, they don't connect. You go to Europe, oh, that's a different world. You go to Europe, these are Christians. These are our cousins. They come from Shem. They have the receptors. Yeah. They know what God is. And then when we have a different version, and they come to recognize that we're right, deep down inside, and this jealousy and this rivalry, then that creates hatred. That creates anti-Semitism. A major chunk of this world are descendants of Chom and Yefes. What's the difference between them? I don't know. But there is a difference between them.
Isn't Yefes the Greeks?
Yeah.
So that's Rome.
The Romans weren't the Greeks. We just learned that yesterday that Edom has no language and culture of its own. That it's a ripoff of Greek.
It's a ripoff of Greek. So that's what I said.
They're Ganovim. They. The world comes from three people. Shem, Chom, and Yefes. They're very different. I don't know how they're different. We all come from Shem. Shem was a religious person. And he, from him, branched in this world today, the modern world, you can't deny, there are three major religions in this world. Judaism, and then came the Christians. It really came from Jews. And then came 600-700 years later, this new, as the Rambam says, a Meshugana. He used the word Meshuga. A person invented a new religion, Muhammad, and...
What was Muhammad before?
He wasn't even literate.
The Arab Yasudi.
They didn't know how to read or write, nothing. He must have had. And he was able to convince the world, trust me, God came to me, Allah came to me and told me what to do, trust me. Today you have, how many billion of them are there out there? Scary, right? And what do they believe in? I don't know. So okay, so the point over here is, we today, for whatever the reasons are, we, this is the common approach, we view Islam as a representative of Yishmael. We view Christianity as a representative of Esau. And it must be true. If this is what the world we accept in Yadus today, there's a lot of reasons for that, and there's a lot of truth to that. But you have to appreciate that the Radak, who was almost hundreds of years ago, did not look at it like that, and it didn't. It wasn't as developed, defined the way it is today. Maybe that's why he did not look at it like that. And he says that even the people of Yishmael are Edom. Even they. And that's why you recall the safety saver, the four Goliaths, the Arba Goliaths. First is Bavel, then it's Paras Umodai, Yavon, and Edom. And everyone has to question, what about today? We suffer the most from Yishmael. We have four Goliaths, so where does Yishmael fit into the picture? Why only recently in history? The Crusades, we didn't suffer. During the Crusades, we suffered from Yishmael. It was mainly the Christians. But when they fought back, when the Muslims, the Crusades was a world war between Christianity and Islam, and the Jews were the collateral damage. The collateral damage on both sides. On both sides. Both from the Muslims, it went back and forth. Sometimes they were our friends. I don't know if you don't hear from so. But modern times it's a horror. What's been going on the last 100 years is what to talk about. So where does that fit into the picture of the Dalit Malchias? So there's been books, forum written about this, and you look in the first year. There's a fifth golus. Yishmael comes after. It's not a Malchus. But one of the simplest answers is, and people don't like this answer, is that Yishmael is included in Edom. And therefore we're now in the fourth Golus of Edom, and Edom is a catch-all for what we call Christianity and Islam. And that's exactly what the Radak says. The Radak says we have to appreciate that what we understand in the street. The common understanding is it's accepted, but it's a chiddush. It is a chiddush, because why really should that be so? And when you look at the Mefarshim, you talk about the Dalit Malchios, and you look at a Radak like this, you begin to scratch your head, and then you come to understand that in Echanami, it's not so similar. The Radak is taking even a more simplistic approach, is that in Echanami, that today, modern-day Islam is just another form of Edom. It's not really, it's not Yishmael. Yishmael is Yishmael. We even know Yishmael. Where's Yishmael? Chazal said Yishmael did tshuva, b'sof yama. What happened to him? We don't know what happened to him.
Not the Palestinian, the Ishmaelim.
We spoke for 45 minutes about this. Okay, let's go further. Here's this Radak. The Eretz Edom ain hayom of Edom ki umos and spabu umam heim bein umamunas hanoitzrim. What is Edom? Edom today is anyone that is a card-carrying member of Christianity. The Munas Hayishmeelim, a card-carrying member of Islam. You don't even know today who's really a descendant of Edom, Moab, Me'amon, Meshach, Umois, Kikulam, Golom, Yartzam, and Nisavru, Be'umois, Ela, Shemalchus, Roimi, Choysa, Batchilo, Rubam, Bnei Adam. When Rome began, when Rome first rose to power, towards the tail end of the Bayis Sheni, okay, it's probably 100 years after the last 100 years of the Bayis Sheni is when Rome became a world power. They were pagans, they were barbarians. Rome, they rose to power before Christianity. Umasha, Amru, Hanavim, those people who rose to power, they were blood descendants of who? Of Esav, of Edom. And then they rose to power, they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Fast forward a couple of hundred years, they embraced Catholicism, they embraced Christianity, Catholicism, and that's how we know them today. And from that sparked a rebellion against them, a new religion of Islam, but it's also part of the original nation of Edom, according to the Radak. No, I don't think so. I think his opinion is pretty much, I think it's popular for Rishonim. Look in the book. It's pretty popular, opinion. I think the Malm, I think the Malm also likes this approach. We're living, listen, we're living in different times, so somehow everything got twisted for us. All these various sections of Yisrael, when Rome Edom will come to an end, which he says when his understanding, when Christianity and Islam go bankrupt, because that's what he's saying. Edom today is defined, it's really very powerful what he says. Edom today is not defined as Western civilization, it's not defined in a region of the world. Edom today is defined as religion. Two religions, Christianity and Islam. When they will go bankrupt, when they will come to acknowledge that their religion is garbage, there's nothing here, it's false, it's just a lie, that is when the Geula will come. That's what he says. This is the Yisrael of the Radak. Edom is not Western thought, Western civilization, it's not Europe, it's not Japan, it's religions, two religions, that's what it is, and that's when the Geula will come. In Eicha, okay, we all know that Eicha is not called Eicha. Eicha is a new word that we invented. Eicha is called Megillas Kinois. There's Megillas Esther, and there's Megillas Kinois. Okay, Kinois, Lamentations, that's called Eicha. Tam Avonech Basioin, your sin has been forgiven, has come to, in other words, the sin no longer is recognized. Lo Yosef Lehagloisech, Hashem will no longer send you into exile. Why? Because Pokar Avoinech Bas Edom. It's Tolui Zebzeh. Edom has come to an end. Next, Mardak Koyam Hashem Elokim LeEdom. Bavur Edom concerning Edom. Kamo Imri Li Achi say concerning me. When it says the word Lamed means concerning. Shemur Shamanu Meis Hashem Shiyomer Hagoyim Al Edom. The nations will say about Edom, Shmua Shemana Meis Hashem Kuchilu Tzir Bagoyim Shulach Umachi Hashmua Shoyomu Goy Lagoy. One nation will say to another nation, let us rise up and go to war, which means all of the nations of the world who did not subscribe to Islam and Christianity will rebel against these two religions. Okay, that's how the Radak is learning. When it says the other nations, who are the other nations? Any nation that is not a believer in Christianity and Islam will form an alliance, a coalition, to go to war against nations who are believers in these two religions. That's what's going to happen. Biachus Hayamim. It seems like a very religious world at the end, right? Everyone's fighting over religion. Today, religion is not very popular out there in the world. Today, it's more of a pagan world almost. Today, outside, not even allowed to talk about religion. You go and you say, God, who's that? Right? You have to be very careful. What? Even in America, you have to be very sensitive. Very sensitive to people's sensitivity.
Muslims believe in one God. One God. But in Christianity,
Okay, so rise up. So simply means less. Or they're all going to come together. Now, or he's giving them a new interpretation, and this requires that we read the words out of order. It means out of order. A new perish, not like Sof. Now we have something new to learn today. Not like Rashi and the Mitzudos. They were consistent, and with the Radak in this first interpretation, the subject of Shemua Shamanu are the nations of the world. The nations of the world are talking to each other and they're saying the time has come now to go to war against Islam and Christianity, against old Winston's Edom. Now the Radak is saying Shemua Shamanu, the subject is the team of prophets. We have a team of prophets, a baseball team. We have Omois and Yeshaya and Ovadia. And who else, whatever. We have a team. So Avadya is saying, Shemua Shamanu, me and my and the members of my club. Who are my members? The other prophets. The other prophets in my neighborhood, we all are very well aware that the days are coming, the days of Edom are numbered. Ki koyama Hashem Elokim le'edom, yitzir bagim shulach, kamoshe b'rashim, l'chinam, yivyo hanav, Next, I want to finish up the Radax. Beis hinei katoin, bozui v'shaful. What did he say about Edom? You are despised. You're bozui, you're katoin, you're bozui v'shaful, you're low. K'mei katoin dim kol ha-chasadim. Yaakov also said about himself, katoin di. P'chein tegum yonis en ho-chalosh, ye-havtoch esav rishia be-amaya. Chalosh means weak. It's very, very important, Targum. The Targum is translating the word of Kotoin to mean weak. You're a weakling. Chalosh. And then when it says the next word, it says that bozoi, it means you're wicked. Okay, that's a very interesting translation. That's not what we learned in Rashi and the Mitzudois. They translated, it means that it talks about a melech. There's no melech ben melech. There's no monarchy. It's a democracy. Democracy is bozoi. Or it's katon. We had a different question of what the choice was. Everything you have is stolen. In South Korea, they have a lot of incredible. Someone told me, is this true? South Korea, they make the Hyundai. Hyundai. Yeah, boy, I know that. They're very not good cars. They became very good. The Hyundai cars, all the Genesis, the luxury, the Elantra, the Sonata. Good stuff. Good stuff. Where does it come from? What? Where does it come from? South Korea. Yeah. So someone told me this is true. Everything they have, they were stolen. The technology of Hyundai was all ripped off other countries.
From Japan.
They stole from Toyota? They actually stole it. I'm not talking about they purchased it, this, that. It's like it was ripped off. They have good stuff. And is that really true?
They could copy.
It's more than copy. There's something called being a copycat, then there's something called actually stealing.
I mean, the Chinese are known for doing that.
But they say
it's not illegal internationally.
They make in South. Where's the LG? I have an LG phone. I have an LG phone. They make they're the second best. The LGs. They have the reputation is second to none. Okay, LG.
Samsung.
LG's or South Korea. So in South Korea, you know, the things that go on there is not necessarily 100%. I don't know. But that's what the pasuk here says, an example of bozui. It's not your own. Whatever you have in this world, you stole, you copied from someone else. Today we don't appreciate this, because we're talking about, today we live in the modern world, so it's hard to appreciate. But in ancient times, a Latin nation has its own language, its own script. It's 100% authentic, unique. A country that has nothing to offer and they have to go and take from other countries their own language, their own script, that is bozui. If you have a country that has an economy that's built upon technology that's not unique to them, they've stolen, they've taken from someone else, that's in essence, it's a bozui atama'od. What makes you unique? Where is your unique contribution to society? A country needs to have pride, made in the USA. You have to have pride that it's unique to your country. You have to translate these concepts into modern times, period.
Bozui is not coming from bizarre that somebody is robbed. It's
yeah, well, oh, excellent. Oh, you said something good. You see that? He fired out. Forgive me, but you finally said something good. You're saying very good. He's saying that bozui comes in Lashon of biza, spoils of war. Spoils of war. Did you earn the spoils of war? No, you stole it.
In the case of
you stole it. So if a teaching, Abai said, hear him out. He's saying something very profound. Hear him out. This comes straight from Iran.
When you should graduate.
This is very profound what he's saying. Until now we have learned bozui to mean Bazoi to mean you don't have anything that belongs to you. So what is the civil translation? Vayivez Esav es habechira. It's despised. It's disgusting. It's lowly. A country that has nothing to offer about themselves. You have no uniqueness. You're bazoi. He's telling us something much more profound. If you don't have it from your own, where did you get it from? You got it from someone else. Got it from someone else. That's just like, don't translate the word bozui miloshon of bizoyon, disgrace. Miloshon of bizui, the bizui milchama.
Bizat hayam.
The bizas hayam. Spoils of war. Spoils of war are things that you did not earn. You did not sweat to earn. It's stolen. It's not so you can say stole, but it's taken from someone else. So that's why it fits very appropriately to say that a nation that doesn't have their own script, their own language, and they took it from someone else, they're called bazui. They're called despised, but the real, in this context, the word bazui means like lashon of biza. It's not their own. It was taken from someone else.
It's brilliant. No, that doesn't make montage that they take pieces and they make montage.
Okay, a montage. Fancy word there, yeah. Yeah, what? Big word. Yeah. Yeah. Vayives beinav.
So that's the linkage between Haman and Esav. Both had this.
We said that yesterday. We mentioned that yesterday.
We didn't really get into it, but I just wanted to
correct.
Quote that.
I wasn't yesterday.
Here links it to the pasuk.
Vayives Esav. The reason why they're called
different translations of that word also. So it's called the despicable one, and then Esav spurned the Bechora, right? And here it says it seemed contemptible to him to lay hands on Mordecai.
Okay, let's finish up very quickly. The last right, the two lines, page 380. The last two lines. Bozoi v'shavul kamoi v'katayintim mikol achasim ben v'radak. Pasuk base. Bozoi v'shavul kamoi katayintim mikol achasodim v'chaintik benesan ha chalosh ye havtach esav rishio ba'amemaya. I've made you. You are chalosh. He's translating the word katayin, as we said before, to mean weak. New translation. V'chain amar bozoi v'moayin kolaymar shlo yachushu l'choshar hagoyim. No one considers you. They don't give you a second look. Im toivad, and if you'll be destroyed, big deal. Who cares? No one's gonna lose sleep over you, over your absence. Nisaticha k'moy etencha. I will position you. Ki benevuas avar b'mokim osid rabim. Okay, so nisaticha is in the past tense. Nisaticha is in the past tense. But this is a prophecy. A prophecy is in the future. This is, we had this 100 times. Because prophecy by HaKadosh Baruch Hu is as if it has already happened. And that is why there is a mixing of the tenses in prophecy. We interchange the past, the present, and the future, because it's all the same. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hoya, Hoyve, V'yia. A prophecy by HaKadosh Baruch Hu is as if it already has come about. So an event that's in the future, we can write Nisaticha in the past tense, because it's Ki'ilu, it already happened. Okay, tomorrow we will continue with the Malbo.